So Maddie, our featured guest, I think, has a tremendous sense of timing to come on this program on this particular week, Maddie McQuaid.
He does indeed. His team is atop the National Basketball League standings and is giving themselves an opportunity to really make a charge to a championship this season. Based on what we've seen in the first half of the competition, they've been absolutely outstanding. He's had a lot to do with it. I speak, of course, of the Adelaide 36ers GM of basketball, Matt Weston, who we welcome to the roundtable for the first time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, I want to ask you right off the top, is this exactly as you planned it going into the preseason to be where you are right now?
Top two, definitely, is where we wanted to be. And there's even people that will back that up that, you know, I said that's where we wanted to be. I had a good chat with Bryce at, sort of after the blitz and sort of said, where do we think we'll be and how we'll get there? So, you know, I thought we'd be a top two team. And it's obviously very good to be sitting at top 14-3.
Maddie, I want to start by asking you, how does it feel right now to be the second most popular man in Adelaide? And we know who the most popular man is. He just mentioned his name.
Look, it's been a really good, I think you could say, journey. We went through last year and, it was really my first year back, full-time in the basketball. So I had some legacy contracts and legacy challenges that were there, and there were some really good things put in place that were there in Adelaide. Off court, they were doing very well. We just needed to, get the on-court situation sorted. So, to get that sort of, to the position that we want it to be in and where we want to go, it does feel good.
Yeah. I think a lot of people kind of don't know your background. I mean, obviously, I do. So I just wanted to go through it. I mean, you obviously way, way back, you're an assistant coach to Brett Brown with the Sydney Kings. You were with the West Sydney Razorbacks. Yeah. You had a very successful basketball business. You were a scout for the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of work in China. What I wanted to ask you, what drew you back to the NBL in the first place?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I've spent probably sort of 7-8 years or so out of the game, and I've done some commercial things in business.
Yep.
And I think when I came out of China was the sort of the pivot point for me, because we'd lived there 5 years, just over 5 years full time, and any job that I was able to get in basketball, they all wanted me to stay in China, and we didn't want to. We had a young daughter that was one, and we'd done our time. We really had. So it was like, well, I think I'm going to have to go into something else, and I've got a background, education through economics and finance. So I went into business and went into some private equity ventures and was used there, not with my money, but I help people, sort of navigate different things. And I use a lot of my sport to help drive leadership and things like that in the business world. So I was doing well there and enjoying it. And then I'm still a shareholder of a business which is in China. And we actually manufacture adult diapers. And the best thing for that business was me not working in it, was standing aside and letting the real people do the job. And so I was playing golf every Tuesday and Friday morning and really loving it. And then, Nick Barbato reached out to me and said, look, maybe we could try and do some things. And I just thought he was wanting to pick my brain and just sort of see what I thought. And next minute, here I am, and I'm back in it.
And over the years, I mean, Grant Kelly's a guy, he's gotten a lot of flack. I mean, let's be honest, from various quarters for some of the moves he's made as an owner. I mean, I know Grant pretty well, obviously, but what's your experience been with Grant since you've gotten to Adelaide?
Yeah, like I'd heard some things, like you'd said, and I hadn't given too much, because I think as you get older, you want to feel things and work things out for yourself. When you're a bit younger, you can be persuaded by, you know, outside noise and opinions on people, especially in basketball, Matt. You know this, right?
Yeah,
we've been around Sydney basketball forever, and you just got to go and taste it yourself and see what GK is an incredibly passionate basketball owner, which is good, but he's very, very generous. And he really is. I think that's I don't think he gets a good rap for what he does for the team, for the city. He puts a lot of money into that team and to ensure the success of, the brand and how it penetrates through the city. And so he's been great to work with. And the noise that, again, that I heard are the opinions about him were obviously people that didn't get on with him, but and it can't be any further from the truth. He really is a good, decent guy that cares about people.
Matt, I want to go back a year ago, and you said your first season in this role in that city, and obviously we know a lot about the story of the 2024-25 Adelaide 36ers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are the biggest takeaways that you learned from that first season that you've been able to bring into this year? What did you really learn out of that campaign?
Get good people. Get people that are going to be able to work together. And this isn't at any one person that was there last year that isn't there this year, because there's so many dynamics in sport that it's not saying person X and person Y, they were just, you know, really bad for us and we've got to get away from them. There's all these different mixtures, and it's good to see that people that have now left us, they've moved on to better things maybe and different things, and you say, well, good, and you just hope they're happy. But what we took away from that was we can't do the craziness, and there was a lot of craziness. And so I think on the ABC the other day I said, I didn't sell my soul, but I did rent it out, and I've been away from it. And it's no more of that. It's like, no, you could be super talented, but if you don't have the emotional maturity to be able to grow with us and contribute to the team in a positive way, we know there's going to be days that not everyone's their best version of themselves. But for us, it was almost every day there was something going on outside. So I sometimes say to Mike Wells, like, I don't even know how we won 13 games last year, you know, with the amount of talent that we had. So again, this isn't the point at any one person. It's just to say what it was and what we walked into and what we've been able to turn around, the results show.
I guess without going into specifics, just to give us an idea of what those days were like, and you mentioned every day there'd be something new. I guess, what was your stress level like on a day-to-day basis as the year went on?
Yeah, it's real. It's probably more anxiety than, say, stress, because you're hoping nothing happens. You're hoping there's no blow-up at practice and you've got some key personalities that are going to bump heads. So the anxiety levels were high, and that carried through into games where – when we were good, we were very good.
Yeah.
But when we were bad, we were just, you know, very ordinary. So stress was probably the byproduct of the anxiety that you drive. And people say eggshells. We're walking around on eggshells all the time, hoping nothing goes wrong. Well, you can't live your life like that. You've got to take control and make decisions and say what what we want to be and how we want to be that way, because it's not worth it.
How bad did it get at its worst?
Really bad. Really bad. You know, you'd shut practices down and say, look, we're not going to go down that path anymore. We're going to stop. And it, you know, I wasn't the one that probably felt it the most. It was probably the coaches that had to, you know, manage it. So, again, I'm not pointing at any one person. There's a lot of different dynamics around, but it wasn't good. It just wasn't good. And it wasn't the way you want to build a professional program. It's not the way, you know, Grant's invests a lot of money in what he wants to see. And, you know, we've moved on from that. So I think that's a good thing.
So when you take that step of moving on from that, when you assess this after the season ends,
Yeah.
Where did it begin? Did it begin with the coach? Did it begin with the culture? How did you take that first step?
Yeah, I think it's probably what you were asking before, you know, in terms of what was it that you learned. What we learned was we need to get people that are going to buy into what Mike Wells wants to do.
Mm.
And what do we need out of people? So a lot of the conversations when we'd sit there and say, what sort of people do we need? We know the basketball part, but then we'd dig down, what are people saying about this guy? And, you know, everyone knows each other around the league. And so you'd ask, you know, what's this guy like? What's that guy like? How's he going to come? There was lots of conversations that way. But I think fundamentally what we thought was, look, what we've got to do is we just got to take a step back and get some guys in here that are going to do the things we want to do, a la like Dean Vickerman has with his group, and be able to get guys that are going to come in and follow and listen to Mike Wells. Because you've got to have that. Whether I say, you know, I believe Mike's a great coach, right? And people might have their opinion, oh, I don't like this, don't like that. That's fine. You can have that. However, we need everyone on our team following Mike. Otherwise, it just doesn't work when you get splintered. And I think that's showing this year that we've won games this year because we are on the one page.
Just one last thing on that before we move on topics. When you talk about those guys, you gave me one or you could give me a couple. Who are the guys that best exemplify exactly what you're talking about?
What I'm talking about now? I think there's actually a few. A lot of the new guys that have come in, really, we're really fortunate. I think you make your own luck, and we've got that. But I think, you know, guys, and let's not even start with the starters. You move down the bench. I like to look at the back of the bench. So you look at guys like Michael Harris, Matty Kenyon, right? Isaac White, incredibly high IQ, EQ, Flinny Cameron, who's come through Melbourne United. These are guys that are able to buy into a role. There's a guy, Bryce Cotton, of course, and he, let's be honest, he's helped me a lot, right, both on court, off court. But each of those guys, and then you've got Isaac and DJ that are here that are now able to be the real best versions of themselves. And DJ's leadership's taken another level. Isaac's game's gone another step or two ahead.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's not any one person there, Julian, but definitely those guys that I said, there's just something about those guys that really bring a good feel and vibe to our team.
Matty, you talked about Mike, and, you know, obviously there was a lot of controversy, as there typically is around Adelaide and has been over the years, and you personally and Nick and Grant to a degree received a lot of grief when you brought in Mike, not to go too deep into the situation, but obviously the move is paying off in spades right now, and he went through that first season obviously as well. I just wanted to understand, what was it about Mike? And obviously, tremendous experience in the NBA as an assistant, hadn't had a head coaching role, had been involved at college level as well. But, you know, coaching in Adelaide is a very tough NBL gig, as we know. You know, it's almost as bad as Sydney, or almost as hard as Sydney. But what had you convinced he was going to be that guy? And what's he been like to work with on the day-to-day?
Yeah, so he's very much like Brett in terms of the way he looks at the game, his sense of humour. So it's like I'm dealing with Brett. So that part, tick, it's very easy. You're right. Coming into Adelaide, it's not an easy gig. And I think it was easier for me to go, let's go with someone that has no idea rather than someone that has a bit of apprehension. And, you know, we, before my time, we had talks with Gorge and Billy T to come down, and they were pretty close. But I know there's some apprehension around, you know, if it doesn't get right, suddenly I'm public enemy number one. Well, Mike had no idea about that, and that was going to be good. And I think the other thing was because we were going to change and go into a direction, having someone that had no equity here was going to be good. Right, because they weren't going to say, yeah, but this about Adelaide or that about Adelaide or this about the league. That was going to give us a fresh start. When I look at the basketball piece and you say, all right, why do you go with him with that? The detail that he goes into for a game, for a training session. So he will meet with the coaches for an hour and a half, like all the teams do, an hour and a half, 2 hours before practice to get practice ready, right? That was the level of detail that I wanted, and that was going to set us up in the best way to be successful. So I knew that I was getting a guy that didn't have the head coaching experience. So we go, all right, we're going to have the teething problems of a new head coach. However, we're getting 30 years of experience under great coaches and leaders in itself. And I think we're seeing that this year, how Mike has taken that next step up and put not only his basketball knowledge, but his leadership qualities are coming through with relationships that he's got with Isaac and DJ, that you're seeing, you know, DJ's roles change dramatically, but he's right on page and he's with us. So I think that was one of the things that I thought, this is why we'll go this way.
And the other thing I want to talk about, still sticking with the coaching, and it's interesting, it's kind of gone under the radar for you. Your group of assistant coaches is high quality people and people with enormous experience. I mean, Marko Marinović and his international experience. Kerry Williams has been thought of as a future head NBL head coach for a long period of time. Luke Koenig or Svetkovic, Jacob Daracot. Can you just give us a sense about how important those guys have been in helping to build this squad and a culture that is clearly, you know, top notch at the moment? It seems to be from afar anyway.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Matt, and I'm glad you brought it up, because a lot of those guys go unseen and everyone sees Mike, but you're absolutely right. And we got Kerry because probably Kerry was at a crossroads of what does he do in his career? And he'd been so long at Cairns that you almost get cast type there, and he needed a new sort of, you know, challenge. And so I convinced him to come down, Luke Cairn as well. Marco's, you know, he's an assistant coach on the Serbian national team that he's in Olympics, and, you know, people, I don't think we truly appreciate what his knowledge is of the game in terms of, we do as a Sixers, I'm sure the outer
skirt. It's big time.
You know, and he coached the under 20 Serbian national team to a bronze with a very limited team because he lost all his guys to NILs. And they couldn't play in the Euros. So he coached that, and Igor actually went over and coached with him, which I thought was great. Jacob Daracot, Igor and Jacob Daracot, that, you know, when you first met me, Matt, that's where I was in my journey, right? Yeah. We just didn't have as many coaches then. I was scouting 12 teams. We break the teams up for these guys now. But they're at their start of the journey, and they bring a level of energy and eagerness to the group as well, and very well respected. But I made some clear decisions when I came in was to get more coaching, because we spend so much on our team. Why aren't we spending on coaching? Because they're the ones, the coaches are going to bring the best out of the players. So we're really well and truly over $1 million a year just in coaches to what we do. But that's the investment that Nick and Grant you know, back me in on and say, yeah, we have to do this. This is the way to go to become a better program. And I think we're starting to see the green shoots come through.
You get the deal of a lifetime when Bryce Cotton becomes available.
Absolutely.
And you go and get him and pull off probably the biggest NBL free agency signing that I can remember. Mm. Going back to when you had those conversations with Bryce.
Yeah.
What was the dream that you sold him on with the Adelaide 36ers? And do you think that you're on that pathway now?
Yeah. So I think at the start, I was more worried that this is too good to be true and something will happen. Yeah. So we're actually running our DP camp at the time. And I had just a chat with his manager. And I said, hey, what is he doing? You know? And he said, oh, nothing. I said, would he be interested? And he said, look, Bryce is going to tell me really quickly. I'll tell him you're interested. And if he'll say yeah or no, and then we don't have to waste time. I said, perfect. He said, can you get to this amount of money? I said, yes, I can. And I didn't know if I could. I knew I had to go and still speak to Grant.
You're not the only one that's gotten the credit card trouble. It's okay.
Absolutely. But see, this is a relationship that Mike, myself, Nick and Grant have. We're so aligned into where we are. I knew Grant and Nick are business people. They're not going to say, well, we really don't have the budget. We're just going to go get the money. We'll find it, right? That's how we are down here. So he came back 2 minutes later on an SMS because, you know, at that time, Bryce was down in Puerto Rico. And he said, yeah, he's interested. He does. I said, okay, let's roll. So it was like, this is what we're seeing. This is what we'd like him to be. We just want him to be Bryce Cotton. Come in, same thing, help run our team. Mike had a call with him, I think the next morning, very early because of Puerto Rican time. And then got a message saying, hey, do we want to get this done? And, you know, Bryce's people said, look, we don't want this getting out in the media to, you know, let's just keep it in-house and get through the deal. So that probably took 2.5 days just to get everything aligned to how we wanted it to be. And so I didn't sleep that much, which is absolutely fine because of the outcome. And we got that done. And what our dream was and what we're pitching to him is, you know, come in and be, and Mike was big on this, be Tom Brady. You've left Perth. Come and win one here, win two here, and show them that it was you, right, that you're the guy. And Bryce is so competitive that I think he's gone, yeah, I'm going to do this. And, you know, he's a real basketball mind, as you could tell. He's the best player ever here. Let's keep Andrew Gaze out of it because he's like our god. But, you know, what he's done, and you know he's got a really good basketball brain, and he sat with Mike and they've gone through a lot of the basketball bits as with me, and we said, you know, let's get this going. So I think it's the ability of having a new start and not saying it was only because I was in Perth that I was successful. And I think that's what got him, you know, really interested.
When you first told the playing group, hey, yeah, we've got Bryce Cotton coming in, what was their reaction?
No one believed me. And
Michael Jordan coming in next?
Yeah. So I'll tell you a funny story. So we worked on it, and I think it was about 4 o'clock on a Thursday. We got the deal done. Everything was done into the NBL, and we said, all right, this is going to start to blow up here. And I was driving home, and I was like, oh, I know these guys going to NBL 1 and what have you, so I'll better get to them. So I got the DJ first, being our captain, and I said, mate, look, I'm letting you know we've signed Bryce. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And I said, no, we've got him. This is what it is. Yeah. So he goes, are you serious? I said, yes, I'm serious. We've got him. And he's like, my God. So, and then we actually have a bit of an inside, not a joke, but a saying, which is, where were you when you heard that Bryce had signed with us? So we asked different sponsors and things like that, where were you when you heard Bryce Cotton? And people have got a story. They're like, oh, I was driving home and I heard it on the radio and I rang my wife, you know, those sorts of things. And Ben Gristic and Keanu Rasmussen were sharing messages going, we've got to catch up tonight now. I can't believe they were both and said, come on, we've got to meet up after training. I can't believe this is happening. So that's sort of the impact. And Isaac Humphries was over in LA, and so it was middle of the night. And he remembers the phone blowing up with messages, and he just said, oh, I'm not going to bother, I'm sleeping. And then he woke up like, same thing. My God, Weston, what have you done?
When did it hit you that you got the deal done? Did it take a couple of weeks? Did it take a couple of days?
Yeah, look, I reckon the drive home, and it was about 4 o'clock, and at about 5-ish driving home, my phone started blowing up, and I was not answering. I was just letting it go. And when people, you know, you guys are in the media, when they ring you 3 times in a row and people leaving messages go, you know why I'm calling, I'm like, okay, it's out. Because, you know, it's still sitting in with the NBL. I'm waiting for them to go, yeah, you can announce, you can go through all this. So I'm ringing the NBL going, mate, my phone's blowing up. We've got to, can I do it? And Heath from the NBL's like, yeah, go. You know, we're gonna roll with it. We're putting on a special show, NBL Overtime, just for this now, which Peter Hooley was not ready for at all. How long did it take? I think I was a little bit numb driving home, and it's one of those things, of, you know, and I'm sure you guys through your careers have had that moment where you do something big and then you go, wow, it really did set in. But I reckon it was still a little while till it became real, and then you see Bryce in a Sixers polo, and then you see the effect he has on people, and you go, each day you sort of just smile and say, wow, life's a bit easier.
So then take us into preseason when he comes in and the effect that he has on the team and what he brings, because we know what he does on the floor. We've watched him for over a decade. He's a very well-known commodity. Take us inside the four walls and what he brings day to day.
Yeah, so what he brings is a lot of stability. He's very, you know, emotionally, he's very in check. He's a leader, and I had lunch with Matty Nielsen in Vegas, who coached him for a couple of years with Trev over in Perth before he headed over to the Spurs. And Matt said he's a leader. He doesn't say a lot, but when he does talk, people listen. But he's a leader in the change room by just his behaviours and his habits and his standards. So, you know, he has his way of being able to enter a room and people know he's in the room without him having to say anything or, you know, conduct himself in any poor way because of who he is. So you can imagine if you've got a culture and you're building a culture and your best player is a really nice guy on and off the court, a competitive guy, you can't have dickheads because people are going to say you can't be a dickhead because Bryce isn't. So you don't have the equity to do that. So everyone can't get above him, and he's such a good guy, and he's so humble. And I'm, you know, that was one thing that I knew he was a good dude, but working around him, it just say how humble he is, but how he's still so competitive. But he doesn't take any cheap shots. He always takes the high ground. He's a person of, you know, impeccable character. And I think that's why, you know, one of those key components of us being able to get to where we are. And you guys have watched the league. There's some games this year that could have gone the other way, but we've found a way. And not only the Perth game, that was something else. But there's been other games where we've been able to really, you know, pull it out, and we're getting better along this journey. But that's the Bryce effect, Julian. That's what he does. It's no yelling and screaming and demanding. He's softly spoken, but people listen.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, some of the games that he's pulled out. What about the last week's game against Melbourne? The fact that he fouls out for the first time in his career with an absolutely ridiculous foul call, but we won't go there. But fouls out for the first time in his career. You guys are in it. You know, they've made a big comeback. They're in overtime. They've got the momentum, and yet you pull that out.
Yeah.
A couple of things. Number one, I mean, what does that do to the club's confidence and the team's confidence moving forward?
Yeah. You know,
getting a win in those circumstances. And number two, I wanted to be a bit specific. How big has Bryce been for Isaac Humphries in particular? And to the point where now you've got, you know, there was a newspaper article, Matty Logue talked about it, that NBA teams have got their eyes on Isaac, which shouldn't be a surprise. He's been in the association, as we know.
Yeah.
You know, he's all right, had a cup of coffee, but he's there. He's been in the system, so they know him. And, and we know how there's so many eyes on him. But, yeah, just talk about those two things. Now, one, for the from a group perspective, and then two, individually, what Bryce has meant to Ice.
Yeah, really good points there, Matty. The first one, it's huge because when you've got Bryce, you can become not a one-trick pony, but it can become that focal point. And we know that we're going to be able to go on that. And I'll be quite honest, when he fouled out, I was like, wow, this is going to be a challenge because he was doing our real scoring for us. What it enables us to do, probably inside and also the outside noise, is say, that's why we've got Flynn Cameron. That's why we've got Zylan Chatham. DJ was huge in that overtime period. His calmness, his leadership, his experience was huge. And the local punter probably doesn't notice it as much. Him just knowing when we're going to get a shot in the offense and go through that was really big. But I think for us to score 18 points in overtime and Bryce may only score two of those and Flynn took over, I think shows, you know, we are a deeper team and when we need to, we can go that way. So I think, you know, you're right from a group point of view, it was good. And it was against Melbourne United. They're a great team, right? People are like, oh, you're choked, you're up by 20. It's like, guys, do you think we're going to keep that lead? This is a bloody good team, right? They're going to come back at you. To the second point, Isaac and Bryce, think, is there anyone that's in as many on-ball offense and defense as those two guys?
Yeah.
Right? So we've got to remember, defensively, they know each other too. So it's one of those things, if they can work so well defensively, they can also do it on the other end because they know where the pocket holes are and they know where to get to. Isaac is a world-class roller at the rim. And he is being, he's having that ability to highlight those skills with Bryce, who really is playing point guard for maybe the first time in his Australian career. And he had 33 points and 13 assists.
Yep, career high.
Yeah. And now the other thing I'd say, guys, is have a count of how many hockey assists gets, right? Because that's one thing people, 13 assists, but how many times on the high on ball when he gets blitzed does he give it to Z on the short roll? And then it's him and Isaac playing two on one, right? Yep. That's creative from him. So Ice is still young. He's still a young man. He's in a really good place with his basketball, his life, and we're just seeing, you know, the best of him. And it, you know, it's quite, you know, pleasing to see because he's such a lovely guy. He really is. He's a Sydney guy, as you know, Matt, and he's a top dude.
And you mentioned Z before, mate, and it's interesting, you know, it's very unusual, obviously you know this, that for imports to kind of sign multi-year deals, but you're on the cusp of doing that with Zion Tatum. Just take us through that process and why you believe it's important that the club lock down Zion for an extended period.
Well, I think, you know, you guys see how he plays and how he conducts himself on the court. There was a highlight I was watching today when, you know, he got the ball off Bryce and because Bryce penetrated, kicked it back out to him, but it was still very early in the shot clock. Most guys would shoot that and he's like, no, come back and get it again. Let's run another on ball here. Yeah. And let's get even another better option. His understanding of the game is really good. The guys love him on and off the court. He's just a top dude to have around the guys. Yeah. And he's at that age of his career where it's really hard also, Matty, as you would know, to find imports that are willing to do what it takes to win. Everyone says it, right? Yeah. Everyone gets off the plane, I'm just here to win, coach. I'm just here to win. Yeah, right. Let's see when we're in Illawarra and we're in the fourth and I just need you to rebound and defend how much you really want to, right? Because that's just his throwaway lines. And the way I want to build this is not just I want to build for the next few years. I've really got a plan which takes me up to about NBL 31, 32. And so we've got a plan in place to everyone do that and who are the people that are going to come in and add that value along that chain and at that time. So we're looking at some kids that have still got 2 to 3 years to go in college and we're just keeping them warm to where I want them to be. And it's unusual. We have not had a multi-year import since probably Darnell Mead.
Yeah.
Right? That we've had here. And I think it's big. So when we turn around next year and the year after, there's a level of familiarity that we haven't had at Adelaide for a very long time.
I want to ask you, looking ahead, and these are a couple of questions that we've had sent in to us as far as names that have been floated around, not just for this season, potentially that you may have spoken to, but in the future, Mitch Creek.
Yep.
Is he someone that, A, that you have spoken to, and B, is he someone that you would like to bring in for next season?
Yeah, I have had chats with Mitch, and we know his management really well. They're sort of two big player managers through Australia that have a lot of players. And that's Lighthouse with Daniel Moldovan and Mogul. And so we've had some chats with that, with them about Mitch. And I think it just comes down to timing as well. You know, Mitch is doing well because he does this almost like a golf tour where he plays in a country for 4 or 5 months and, you know, is able to make really good money and move on to the next one and exploit his talents and sort of see the world at the same time. So it's definitely, you know, something that you always have on the list there, but it comes down to a bit of timing as well, to where we'd be at that time and, how that, you know, how that can fit in.
Have you been close?
Yeah, we had some good chats. We've had some good chats, you know, around it, but, you know, there also comes a dollar figure. Yeah. He's and rightly so, he's not a cheap player. You know, I had to sell my car to buy Bryce, so I've got a push bike now. You know, and I'm happy to ride a push bike to work. That's fine, because he's more important than me. But yeah, it's let's see what happens in the future.
Another one that was thrown around was Antonius Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he another one that you would like to bring in?
Yeah, I speak to AC every sort of couple of months and have since I got the job. He's a really top dude. He really is. And I know he had a podcast just recently and said, you know, I do want to come back to Australia. He said Illawarra and Adelaide would be the places I'd like to play. And I spoke to him because I hadn't spoken to him for a little while after that and said, oh, do you want to come play Bryce, do you? That's what it sounds like. And we had a bit of a laugh. And, look, he's making really good money. Right, really big money, but he has to live in Russia in winter. I just told him that it was 29 degrees at Henley and really blue sky, and hopefully the snow's not too bad in Russia. I think it'll come down to his decision of have I made enough money, and now do I take a bit less but enjoy myself? So even since I got the job, I've been in touch with AC all the time, and we have good chats, and we almost crossed paths on one of my US trips when he was playing out of Fred the Israeli team. You know, and they were at war, Israel was at the time. So he was living in Serbia, flying in and out of Israel to play games. It was just messy. But yeah, he'd be someone that we'd love to have a conversation with.
And just lastly, when should we expect an announcement regarding Cheatham?
Oh, very soon. What are we now, Tuesday?
Yeah.
It would have to be this week.
So take it as read, essentially?
Yeah, yeah. We're right at the, you know, just putting pen to paper now. Yeah, so it's a matter of hours, you know, 24, 48 hours sort of thing, I would say.
Is that the last bit? There's no other holdout, no other conditions?
No.
It's just purely fine?
No. We've agreed to all that. Yep. We've agreed. Yeah, no, everything's done. And we wanted Irie, his partner, to be part of that process as well, because one thing that we've made a real conscious effort, you know, since I know I came in, not that they weren't doing it before, but what do we want to do for the families? How do we make sure that Irie and little Z are happy? Because it's really interesting when you go to another country, it's fine for Z because he gets instant friends and teammates. But the partners don't. They've got to try and work their way through. We do have a really good wife network where they, on our road games, they'll all get together and go to someone's house and watch the game. And we want to make sure that the families are happy, because if the families are happy, then the player's not worried about them when they're away on the road. They can focus on basketball. And for someone like myself that's lived in, you know, different countries, Malaysia and China, I know my companies made sure my wife and kids were looked after, so I was never worried about them. You don't want those phone calls of, I've had enough, let's get out of here. And so we wanted, you know, a re-part of that process, and we had really good discussions over a period of about a month about what the future looks like.
Just one more for me, then I'll hand it over to Matt to finish this up. But the position you're in now, you're Melbourne are three losses behind you and the rest of the peloton. So you're in the best position that the club's been, certainly in this decade, to end what will be, by the time we get to the championship series, a 24-year championship drought.
Yeah.
With all that you've said as far as you have a plan going through the end of the decade,
yeah,
is a championship this season the only pass mark, or is this the first season in a five-year project that even if you get, say, for example, to the championship series, you just miss out? Do you still take that as a win for the season, knowing the weight of history that's on your shoulders? We're talking about Title Town, and it's been a very long time.
Yeah. If we got through to the final and didn't win, I wouldn't be happy because I don't want to come second. I did it once when I was at West Sydney. I left my second place trophy at the Sydney Entertainment Centre. I didn't bother taking it. We want to win. We are here to win. So you're right, Julian, we do have a five-year plan, but we are built to win now, and we're built to win next year and the year after. That's what we're building to. You know, people say it's win or bust. I think every team should be saying that, because we're not the NBA where you have a draft and you say, well, we're going through a rebuild and we're going to have a draft. So over the next 3 years, it's going to be, you know, hard. Look at where the Detroit Pistons were about 2 years ago, and now they're coming through. We don't have that. So if you say I'm getting ready to win in 2-3 years, I don't know what's the difference to saying why it isn't now and why you haven't made moves to get there. So I think all 10 teams should be saying we need to win it, and everyone's spending enough to say you should be able to get it close enough to win it and get into those five-game series. So the competitive juices of me, I don't like second prize, third prize. It doesn't, you know, I'm going to be pretty disappointed. I want to win the thing.
Mate, just one more from me to finish up on. And Julian just mentioned it. Adelaide is known as Title Town. And you know, I've often said, you know, historically, it's one of the great towns for basketball.
Yeah.
You know, in NBL history. I mean, look, the 86 Adelaide 36ers is still the best single season team, as far as I'm concerned, in NBL history, and they're legendary. You know, 24-2, they lose their two regular season games by a bucket each, and then they have that amazing three-game series, the first in NBL history, with the Brisbane Bullets to get the win, and the whole thing about Ken Cole and everything else, and that team was amazing. Obviously, then the Darnell Mee, Kevin Brooks teams with the general, my great friend, and all of that. So, you know, where you've gotten to now, and it's actually been 2 years, because you were getting the great crowds last year as well, but in particular this year, I just want a sense from you personally what it's been like walking into the Adelaide Entertainment Centre in that town that loves that team so much, that is a highly educated basketball fandom, and seeing those 36 of fans pack the joint out night after night after night, and the atmosphere that comes through the television extraordinarily.
Yeah.
You know, what's that been like for you personally?
Yeah, it's great. It's gratifying to be able to see it. I've been living in Adelaide now about 9-10 years. My wife's an Adelaide girl, and you're definitely right. The 86 guys were just unbelievable. Mm. And they're about to come up to their 40th year.
That's right, yeah.
Next year. And we still have...
I assume you'll be doing something to it.
Oh, yes. We will be. We'll be recognising them, because that's really a big part of, establishing the club. Kenny... Pete Ally, there's certain, Al Green's, Mark Davis's, there's so many guys here that have added so much value right at the start of the journey for our proud club. And we don't forget that. And when I go up from the change rooms up to the corporate room, to see the amount of people walking around with the jerseys on and things like that. And now I am a South Australian. I gave up my New South Wales citizenship. you walk around because you know how much it means to the South Australians to be able to support a team, because it's our way of being able to go toe-to-toe, you know, throw punches, et cetera. Not, you know, realistically, but with the bigger cities. So there is this proudness there, and they know basketball. I think Bryce has brought a level of hope as well. But there's been a lot of people behind the scenes, and I've said his name a few times, But the people I'm really happy for are guys like Grant and Nick, who have been there for years, really working hard behind the scenes commercially and with the community to get the brand. Because even before I came in, they sold out like seven games in a row or six games in a row. And we were, you know, ninth. And it's like, wow, I'm like, this is unbelievable. Matty, you remember back in our day when we in the Kings and those Superdome days. Remember some of those?
Oh, God.
They were hard, right?
Very hard, yes.
Very, you know, really, really hard going. And I remember one game where they had an NRL game next door, and it was like, mate, it might be quicker to introduce the crowd to the players than the players to the crowd. And so we've sort of gone through that journey. So seeing these the Adelaide people come through, knowing that this is, you know, part of their hope of, you know, enjoying and being proud to be a South Australian, I take great pleasure in that. I've played a small role in terms of building that, but I know how much it means to the people, and it does give me a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a smile on my face, I suppose you could say.
Matt, thank you so much for spending so much of your time with us and giving us some terrific insight, not just us, but for the many 36er fans that listen to this program. And we're excited to see where this leads, not just throughout this season, but over the next several seasons to come. Good luck and go well.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.